Monday will mark the fourth Christmas day clouded by COVID-19. Dr. Sandro Galea is asking, what have we learned? Specifically, what did our public health officials get right and wrong? And how can they restore an eroded sense of trust? The book is Within Reason, A Liberal Public Health for an Illiberal Time. Dr. Sandro Galea is an epidemiologist, a professor and dean of Boston University's School of Public Health. BU holds the license on WBUR. Dr. Galea, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you, Tiziana, for having me.
So this book is a bit of a doozy. You take head-on a lot of controversies in it, but not as best as I can tell, because you wanted to be controversial. You really wanted to be reflective.
Yeah, I did. Thank you. I'm not sure how to think about the doozy part. I really did. I tried very hard to write a book that was forward-looking, not backward-looking. I was not interested in writing a book that pointed fingers or that condemned. I was actually interested in saying, what have we learned and how can we do better going forward?
When I say doozy, Dr. Galea, you take on everything from, you know, the five lessons that you summarize again at the end. And in those are things like the politicization of public health. There is, moving. Well, here, I pulled the list. I read the whole book and the summary at the end was really good. Five problems this book is engaged with. Politicization of science and public health institutions, forgetting our roots, becoming poor at weighing trade-offs, getting caught in media feedback loops, and cultivating influence rather than pursuing truth. These were critiques that you laid out of the field of public health over the last 4 years. And you root it, Dr. Galea, in this liberal versus illiberal. And because those two words are so important, and there's so much I want to talk to you about in this book, let's just start with those two terms so that people know what you mean when you use the terms liberal and illiberal.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm very careful in the book. When I mean liberal, I don't mean leftist. I don't mean blue. I don't mean Democrat. I mean liberal in the Enlightenment sense of the word. And that means a set of thoughts that rest on the notion that their individual autonomy is central to how we think, that we base how we move as a society on data and reason, that we move away from ideology, that we welcome a plurality of perspectives, that we recognize that many of us can have different ideas. And the way to move forward is by listening to those ideas so we can find the most reasoned way forward.
And you argue that that is, in fact, the tradition of the practice of public health.
It is. And when you look historically at where public health emerged, I mean, public health measures have been around for thousands of years, but formal public health emerged from a moment in time when we realized, for example, that things like cholera were not emerging from magical, mystical forces. They actually were due to bugs that we could observe, that we could count. So this was this growth of reason, and that informed what public health became in the sort of mid-19th century Western world. There are traditions that are public health traditions for thousands of years, but that's the formal roots of public health.
Okay, so now do the illiberal part.
Well, I think the liberal part is the converse. It is when we close our minds, when we actually have firm beliefs, we're not willing to listen to alternative ideas, when we quickly fix on this is one right approach and we're not willing to listen to anything else, and when we shut down discussion and debate. And I think that's the illiberal approach.
And you felt that public health in the Commonwealth, in the country, and sometimes in the world fell into some of those traps over the last 4 years. And to illustrate, let's get really concrete, because your opening illustration in the introduction of the book, you're running, you're out running in your hometown of Brookline, and you come across a favorite bakery. And there's a sign on the door of this bakery in Brookline. Take us there, because it is perhaps one of the most compelling moments in the whole book, and it's right in the introduction.
Yeah, thank you. So this is, you're correct. When we're running in the weekend, my wife and I, we end our run at a bakery to buy pastries sort of to mitigate the positives of the run. The bakery, and towards the end of 2021, had a sign on the door that said, essentially, Brookline Health Department has decided that, you know, we no longer need to wear masks, but we in the bakery disagree, and we still ask you to wear masks in the store. Now, the challenge that I pose to the reader in the book is to say, can you imagine a time before COVID when the bakery, which presumably, I don't know for a fact, doesn't have their own board of medical advisors, would put up a sign that says, health experts say X, but we insist on Y. It was actually inconceivable before COVID that something like that would have happened. And I take from that and I ask the question to say, well, what happened? Why is it that a bakery feels that public health, the establishment, doctors, you know, this is Brookline, which there are, you know, more doctors than you can shake a stick at, are all wrong. And the bakery thinks that there's a better course of action. And that is an enormous sort of a no vote on confidence in public health. And of course, you know, I use the bakery as an anecdote, but the surveys and the data that are emerging show the same thing. There, recently, Pew had a survey about trust in science, trust in public health, showing a 25-point drop in trust in science from before COVID to after COVID. And now the drop is, there are patterns to it in terms of people's ideological framing, but it's across the board. And to my mind, it should make us pause and ask, why is that? What can we learn from it? And, you know, you referred to, Sian, in the beginning that I tried in the book to tackle a lot of things, and I thought about that very carefully. I also thought carefully about when would be the right time to write such a book. And I did not think it was the right time to write such a book in 2022, to publish in 2022. I thought we needed some space, we needed
still
some distance,
soon.
But at the same time, to get to a point where we're still paying attention. And that's why the book was published now, sort of 4 years in, as you said in your introduction. I think we're at a point where we're over the acute phase of COVID, and we should be responsibly thinking, what are we learning?
So a couple of things. First, that survey was actually from last month for listeners. And I want to come back to this Brookline Bakery for a minute, because in the introduction, you sort of give two if-thens there, right? So the Brookline Bakery has we're not going to do what the public health department says, we're going to do this. And you say, listen, one of two things is true here. Either people the bakery doesn't believe what the public health officials are saying. They think it's wrong. And then we have a problem because they don't trust that we're getting our science right. Oh. Or they do trust that we're getting our science right. And for other reasons, they still don't want to go with it. And the complexity of that, Dr. Galea, and we're here with Dr. Sandra Galea, who's the dean of the Boston University School of Public Health, talking about this new book, examining public health, 4 years into COVID, it was pandemic. Can we say it's endemic now? Endemic now?
I think we're getting there.
Okay, so moving into the endemic phase. That was sort of, for me, the showstopper, Dr. Galea. Mm-hmm. Either people think we got it wrong, or they think we got it right, but there are other factors that make them not want to go with it anyway. And this gets into politicization, performance, and or not believing that public health is any more with the science.
Well, I very much appreciate your bringing up the word complexity, because if there's one theme that emerges from the book, is that all of this is really difficult. And anybody who thinks that there's a simple answer probably isn't thinking hard enough. And, you know, in the book, I'm very careful to say that COVID was, in many respects, public health's finest hour. Literally millions of people around the world, their lives were saved because of the work of public health, because of this tremendous effort on vaccines happening quickly, because of really quick effort in identifying the disease and implementing mitigation measures. So all of that was terrific. That should not stop us from saying, around that, what else should we have done better and how do we think about it? So let's get to the question of performance. You mentioned performance. Issues of performance and fear were really dominant issues in how we intersected with COVID. And a lot of those, by the way, were in direct response to a very difficult federal government environment, where you have to remember that in 2020 in COVID, we had a president who was actively pushing treatments that really were based on magic and fantasy.
President Donald Trump, and there was the famous press conference where he talked about ingesting bleach, for example.
For example. So it is not unreasonable for public health to act in reaction to something like that. And that's fine in the heat of the moment. Now is the time to say, well, what does it mean? How do we navigate such complex moments? To go back to the word complexity that you introduced in the conversation, where is it that we act in a way that is robust, built on the evidence, and that benefits us all rather than simply performing?
So there were a couple of sort of points in the book I want to draw out. You talk about risks and trade-offs a lot. And you both talk about times when everybody willingly accepted trade-offs of shutdowns because we had limited information. For example, I remember those early days covering the governor's press conferences, Governor Baker's press conferences here in Massachusetts. We had limited information. We weren't sure how the contagion spread. People willingly participated in shutdowns. You also critique heavily the decision to maintain school shutdowns in places like Massachusetts because of the mental health and educational trade-offs. And you critique public health, moving from sort of liberal to illiberal now that we've defined those mm-hmm. terms, Dr. Galea, for not sufficiently being able to stand in a place of doing risk calculus and thinking about what the long-term effects of steps like shutdowns would be. I imagine, A, that you will get pushback and books out. Mm-hmm. There will be those who will be deeply upset with you mm-hmm. for calling that out. Just pick it up there. That risk calculus piece was fascinating.
Yeah, and I appreciate how you noted that we shifted from a liberal to illiberal. And because you noted correctly, the calculus on risk changes as the pandemic evolves. It was quite a different matter in the summer of 2020 when we did not know anything. And we really were in a mode of trying to say, what should we do to mitigate spread of this disease that we're just learning, to the end of 2020 and the beginning of 2021 once we had vaccines. Schools are a really good example of that. And again, there is no clear answer what the right thing was to do with schools. But what we never had in public health was an honest conversation about what we were losing in endorsing keeping schools closed. I mean, now most of the science falls pretty clearly on the side that kids have lost about 6 months of educational attainment, social development, psychological development. That is a big loss. And we, as a society, I think merited a conversation that says there is a certain risk of transmission by keeping schools open, a low risk, which we know, but non-zero risk. Are we willing to have kids fall that far behind, which will then stay with them throughout the rest of their lives? And we never had that conversation because the conversation was freighted in fear that if we open schools, it is all bad. Well, keeping schools closed also had its badness. And it was a bad, bad situation. I think for us as a society, we owed it to ourselves to have that conversation, which we never had.
One of the other things that you talk about is sort of, we'll go back to this complexity versus simplicity and the challenges of that. I'm going to play a little bit of sound from November. This is Dr. Shira Doron, who is also in your field, talking about our guidance about vaccines and kind of moving from complexity to simplicity for messaging. Here it is.
There are other people who feel like we might do better if we went the route of other countries, particularly throughout Europe, that really focus our efforts on the highest risk individuals. But the CDC had a robust set of discussions on this. We have many, many individuals who have risk factors but don't necessarily know it. And so they opted to go with a simple message. Everyone over the age of 6 months should get the updated vaccine.
Just CDC, Centers for Disease Control, which for much of the time period we're talking about, Dr. Galea, was actually run by Dr. Rochelle Walensky, who is from this area. I bring that one forward because another thing that you talk about is the fact that much of the push to vaccinate kids was really focused on keeping adults safe. And once again, transparency in our conversation was something that would have helped us be more thoughtful. Not necessarily, again, that the decision was wrong, but that public health smothered maybe some of the transparency in the conversation. Is that a fair read of what you were saying in the book?
It is. And I'm very clear in the book, and I want to be very clear here, that I think the CDC did an extraordinary job during a very difficult time. And in the book, I try to be very clear about that. The point is one about transparency and about the conversations. I mean, many countries, Western European countries, who we often hold as paragons of their public health effort, did not choose to make vaccination for children mandatory. And they felt comfortable in explaining to the population that in a risk-benefit trade-off, there are risks and there are benefits, and they did not think it was warranted. Now, I'm also clear in the book that we got my kids vaccinated, and we thought it was actually merited it. But at the same time, there is a cost to us saying that there are no risks, that the risk-benefit is so clear. Because people understand that these things are complex. And if there's anything which I think we should have learned in the moment, is that our instinct in public health towards let's simplify the message and let us tell people something simple and tell them it's clear, backfired. And it's backfiring over time as we see this loss of trust. That I suppose I'm encouraging us to say, let us be honest about complexity. Let us be humble about uncertainty. And let us say that there are trade-offs. We might advise X, but we might understand why Y may be something that you may choose. Unfortunately, and now I'm sort of defending public health at the same time, is it was difficult to do that because of the highly partisan nature of the scene at the time. So the challenges to public health came from one particular side of the political spectrum, which then pushed public health into a corner. And in my estimation, we overreacted with false certitude. Now, why do I write this now? I write this now, again, not to look back and say we could have done better, should have done better. I write this now to say, let's recognize that so that going forward, we learn from this.
We're speaking with Dr. Sandro Galea, an epidemiologist, professor, and dean of Boston University School of Public Health. The book is Within Reason, A Liberal Public Health for an Illiberal Time. One of the things that you call for, you know what, I will go there, but I'm going to go there in a minute because I'm going to back up. There was something you said that triggered a thought for me from the book that matches with a text we got in from a listener. So I want to pick up that thread for a second, Dr. Galea. We sent out to our texting group this morning, we're talking with Dr. Sandro Galea about his new book. Did we get the trade-offs right in the way we responded to COVID? What are your stories? And if you'd like to join our texting group, you can do that by texting the word Boston to 617-766-0382. That's 617-766-0382. Here's a part of a text we got this morning from Tammy in Waltham. I'm so disappointed with where we are right now. In 2020, it felt like we were trying to follow the science. But now we all seem to be sick like zombies and repeating counterintuitive phrases like it's just a cold. We all have to get it and herd immunity. We used to track infections and tests, but the decision was made to stop counting it all. So we have no sense when rates are spiking. So it's the herd immunity piece that I want to pull out because it is another lesson that you draw from the book. I remember our early conversations and asked the doctors when we thought maybe we were attempting herd immunity. We learned that that was no longer going to be a viable goal. You talk about the fact that the conversation stayed with herd immunity until long after the reality actually made it clear that that wasn't where we were going to be. And I had two minds of that. One was, yeah, but conversations often lag. And the other is, yes, and also, how does the conversation lag what the reality is clearly showing us? So what's the lesson there for the next pandemic? Because we know there will be another one coming.
I suppose two lessons. Number one is, I think we should be honest about it. I think, you know, you said the conversations often lag. I think we should be honest about that. When you look at our communication, and some of this was due to the influence of social media, which we were learning how to use as a tool to communicate during this acute pandemic, which forces you into these very dispositive statements.
I'm sorry. Could you define dispositive?
Yeah, but what I mean is statements that sound much more certain than they really are. There's no room in there for the asterisk that says we're not so sure about this. So we learned that we need to communicate with the uncertainty. We need to be clear that this may change. We were uncomfortable saying, this is the best of our expertise today, but we'll get back to you tomorrow if it may change. That's number one. The second point to pick up on something from Tammy's text is this phrase, follow the science. You know, I was very worried about the phrase, follow the science in the pandemic, and I still am now, because that phrase suggests that the science leads linearly into the right public policy. Well, public policy isn't just about the science. Public policy must weigh all sorts of other considerations, including economic considerations, including social functioning considerations. And follow the science implies that this is a straight line. Well, it's not a straight line, and we should be honest that it's not a straight line.
So I was going to get to a big old piece of sound from Joe Rogan. and which I'm not going to play, because I'm 100 listeners just went, what?
Because I follow the science.
Right. They can't believe I'm pro Joe, that we're talking pro Joe Rogan. The reason you brought him up was what you felt that he does well. And he is a famous podcaster who's often reviled for being sort of anti follow the science. But you bring him up because you say what he does well is say when he doesn't know what he's talking about. And say, I'm not an expert on this. Here's what I need to learn. That was quite striking to me because we know this will happen again. I feel sick to my stomach saying it, but we know it will happen again. How can we all move forward as learners while needing some level of certainty in order to be able to trust the field of public health again? Do you understand my question?
I do. And I think perhaps it takes extreme humility to say we are going to learn from Joe Rogan. And I think that's okay. And it is difficult to say, here's what we think today, and we may change our mind tomorrow. And we saw in the pandemic time and time again that we did not do that. And there were decisions that were made that we portrayed as the absolute right decision, quote, following the science, even though had we thought about it, we would have seen the implications. Let me give you one example. So one example is this. There's been a lot of conversation since the pandemic, correctly, about the health inequities that the pandemic, certainly in its first year, was borne disproportionately by people of color. Now, when the pandemic first hit, there were these statements that said, it's an infectious disease. What we should do is everybody should stay at home if we can. Now, we knew from before the pandemic that only people who made in the top 25% of incomes, where a majority of them were able to work from home. So when we said everybody should work from home,
we knew.
What we were saying is, if you're in the lower 75% of income, you're not likely going to be able to work from home, which means you're more likely to get COVID. So we were actually making decisions without being upfront about it that were hurting part of the population versus another. So then it's no wonder that people then lose trust, right? So as we made these statements, as we made these decisions, the world was going to be much more likely to trust us in future if we were honest about the implications of these decisions.
So what would a better sentence or two sentences or public statement have been, Dr. Galea?
Well, I'm not sure it can be in two sentences is the challenge. I think the sentence
in social media, it's what you get.
I think the sentence is, there are multiple things to consider. We've considered multiple things. We, the experts, would advise the following, but recognizing that there are some downsides, here are the downsides, and recognizing that the data may change tomorrow and we may have different advice tomorrow.
In our last, 15 seconds, what gives you the most hope?
I think the fact that we're having this conversation gives me hope. I think the fact that we're willing to entertain these ideas today gives me hope. And because I, like you, think this is going to happen again, much as I would like not to think that, but it is going to happen again. And what I'm trying to do here is simply to say, let's talk about this so that we can be better next time.
Dr. Sandro Galea, epidemiologist, professor, dean of Boston University's School of Public Health, and author of the new book, Within Reason, A Liberal Public Health for an Illiberal Time. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.